The first time I heard my own voice coming out of someone else's phone, I didn't recognize it as me. It was too loud, too needy. Like a stranger had stolen my throat and was using it to humiliate me for sport. We were outside the bar on Constant Spring Road, the kind of place where the music leaks into the street and everybody pretends they're not watching everybody. A girl I barely knew, lashes, shiny lip gloss, that calm little smile, tilted her screen so I could hear. "Please," my voice said, thin and shaking, the way it gets when I'm trying not to cry. "Just tell me what you want from me. I'll fix it. I swear I'll fix it." People laughed. Not a roar, just that sharp little burst Jamaicans do when something is sweet and wicked at the same time. One guy coughed into his hand like he was hiding his grin. A woman sucked her teeth and shook her head like I'd done something filthy in public. I reached for the phone like an idiot. The girl pulled it back. "Easy, babes," she said. "You sound so desperate. Miles nearly feels sorry for you." Then my own voice came again. Another clip. Me whispering a name I didn't want anyone to know I ever said like that. And I realized something cold. This wasn't gossip. This was a performance. And I was the soundtrack. Kingston is the kind of place where privacy is a temporary condition. You can have a secret at 9 p.m., and by morning it's wearing makeup and walking around like it owns you. I still believed I could manage it, though. I believed I could be careful enough, smart enough, quiet enough. I was 28, working front desk at a private clinic in Halfway Tree. Polite voice, neat hair, the same good morning, how may I help you? On repeat until it felt like a mask glued to my face. My mother loved telling people where I worked because it sounded respectable. "She worked at a clinic," she'd say, like it was proof she did something right. Respectability is currency here. It buys you forgiveness. It buys you benefit of the doubt. It buys you silence when you need it. That's why I hated how lonely I was. I met Rochelle the way you meet people when you're starving for softness. By accident. And then too fast. She came in for an appointment. And she had that effortless city confidence. Long nails. Clean sneakers. A laugh that filled the space like she owned the air. She joked with me while I checked her in, teased me about being too serious, and when her phone buzzed, she rolled her eyes dramatically like the world was always demanding something from her. "You always so proper," she said, leaning closer like we were already friends. "But Miles can tell you have stress. You need somebody for talk to." I should have heard the hook in that. I didn't. I felt chosen. After that, she'd show up even when she didn't have an appointment, passing through, dropping something off for a nurse, just checking you. She'd bring a patty sometimes, or a little bag with a juice and say, "Eat, nah. You look like you forget yourself. Small things. Kind things. The kind of kindness that makes you feel seen." Then it became the night messages. The first time she called me after midnight, I answered because I thought something bad happened. Her voice was low and breathy, like she was lying down. "Sorry, sorry," she whispered. "Me no late. But Miles Cayenne sleep. Talk to me a little." I should have said no. I should have protected my sleep, my boundaries, my dignity. Instead, I climbed into her orbit because it felt warm. We started with harmless things, work drama, mutual acquaintances, men who irritated us, the price of groceries, the way everyone's always watching. Then she began asking questions that sounded like care. "You and you mother clothes? You ever feel like you life just small? You ever do something and regret it, same time, but you still want it?" I told her things I didn't tell anybody. About my father who never fully claimed me. About the boyfriend I had when I was 21 who liked humiliating me in little ways. Never hitting, just shrinking me. About the way I could smile all day and still go home and sit on my bed like an empty bottle. Rochelle listened, like she was collecting something. At the time, I thought she was collecting me. She sent voice notes, because texting was too dry. She'd laugh and say, "Text easy fi screenshot. Voice note? That real. Like sound, was safer than words. I believed her. God, I believed her. So I answered her voice notes with my own. Sometimes I'd whisper because my mother was asleep in the next room. Sometimes I'd talk too long because the sound of someone listening made me feel less disgusting. And, yeah, sometimes I begged. Not for money. Not for sex. Not for anything dramatic. I begged for reassurance. For clarity. For her to stop going cold on me when I said the wrong thing. Rochelle had this way of pulling away that made my chest panic like it was losing oxygen. One night, I asked her, straight, why you do that? One minute you close to me, next minute you act like I'm bothering you. She didn't answer for an hour. Then she sent one voice note, 10 seconds long. Because you too intense, she said, calm as a judge. And people like you love to play victim. My stomach flipped. I sent 3 voice notes back to back, stupid and frantic. I'm not playing victim. I'm trying to understand. I'm sorry if I'm too much. Just tell me what you want from me. I can still hear it. My own voice cracked on want, like I was offering myself up to be shaped into something acceptable. That was the pattern. Warmth, then distance. Attention, then silence. A little compliment, then a little cut. And I kept reaching. Because my biggest fear wasn't heartbreak. It wasn't even betrayal. It was being the kind of woman people talk about. The kind of woman they call clingy and mad and pathetic. In Jamaica, shame is a public punishment. It doesn't stay inside your skin. It spreads. Rochelle started folding other people into our conversations like it was normal. Me told Tinesh about you, she said one day, casual. She say you seem nice. My spine went stiff. You told her what? Nothing bad, Rochelle said, laughing. Relax yourself. You always so panicky. But I couldn't relax. My mind started doing that thing, imagining my private voice being played in a group, a room. A car full of girls laughing. I hated myself for even thinking it. So I tried to be better, cooler, less needy, more like her. And that's when she started suggesting I owed her. Not money, not directly. Just loyalty. If Miles call you, you answer, she'd say, half joking. Nah, do that busy thing. If I hesitated, she'd hit me with that same calm voice. See it day. People always leave when it inconvenient. One night, after she'd ignored me for 2 days, I snapped. I sent a long message, too long, about how she made me feel small, about how I didn't understand why she kept testing me. Then I deleted it. Then I sent it again as a voice note. Because I wanted her to hear my pain, I wanted it to sound real enough. That she'd stop. Instead, she replied with laughter. Not loud laughter, soft, satisfied. Babes, she said, you really need to learn how to keep yourself together. That should have been my warning. That should have been the moment I stopped. But shame makes you do stupid things. It makes you chase the person holding your dignity like it's a leash. And I was already on the leash. I remember sitting on my bed after that voice note, staring at the ceiling fan, thinking, why the fuck am I doing this? Why the hell am I begging like some idiot? I wanted to throw my phone across the room. I wanted to delete everything, block her, vanish. But I didn't. I just lay there, sick and shaking, because the truth was uglier. I needed her to stop being angry at me more than I needed my own damn pride. Rochelle didn't destroy me all at once. She tightened the trap slowly, like she was teaching me what kind of world she wanted me to live in. It started with small jokes about me in public. We'd meet at a little spot by Emancipation Park sometimes, safe, open, daytime, the kind of place where you can pretend your life is stable because you're eating a sandwich near trees. Rochelle would show up late, kiss her teeth at the sun, complain about her phone dying, complain about people, complain about everything. Then she'd stare at me like she was assessing. You look tired, she'd say. You crying again? I'd blink. No. She laughed. Okay, Miss Angel. The first time she said Miss Angel, I thought it was cute. Then she started saying it louder, in front of other people. One afternoon, her friend Tanisha walked up while we were sitting. Rochelle introduced me like I was an accessory. This A the girl Miles tell you about, Rochelle said. The one always so emotional. My face went hot. I smiled too hard and said hello like my teeth were glued together. Tanisha looked me up and down, polite but curious, like she was already placing me in a story. Rochelle leaned over and whispered to Tanisha, but not quietly enough. Me kind do too much with her, you know. She get attached quick. Tanisha giggled. Stop it, nah. But she didn't stop. Rochelle watched my reaction like she was waiting for me to explode so she could prove something. And I didn't explode. I swallowed it, because the only thing worse than being mocked is being mocked and proving them right. Later that night, Rochelle messaged me. You quiet today. You mad. I typed and deleted. Typed and deleted. Finally, I wrote, no, just tired. She replied, good, keep it so. That's when I understood the rules were changing. She wasn't just my friend. She was my audience, my judge. And she liked me best when I was small. She began asking for favors that sounded harmless but felt strategic. Call in sick tomorrow, she said one evening. Come out with me. I can't just... See, she cut in. You always acting like you have so much responsibility, like you better than people. Miles hate that. It wasn't true, but it didn't matter. She said it like a fact, like a label she could stick to my forehead. When I refused, she punished me with silence. When I agreed, she'd reward me with warmth, sweet voice notes, compliments, a kind of intimacy that felt like relief. She'd say, me rate you, young, and my chest would unclench, like I'd been holding my breath for hours. Then came the first real threat. It was disguised as concern. We were on the phone late again. She sounded tipsy, laughing too much, words running together. You ever think about how people see you? She asked.
Yeah, I said, cautious.
Rochelle hummed, because you too trusting. And you talk too much when you're vulnerable. My throat tightened. What are you talking about? She laughed softly. Me just saying. Kingston small, babes. People hear things. I think people hear things, babes. I tried to keep my voice even. You wouldn't do that. You're my friend. There was a pause. Then she said, almost sweet. Friend? That word mean different things to different people. After that, I couldn't sleep. My mind played my own voice notes like they were weapons. Every confession, every shaky sentence, every moment I sounded weak. I started asking Rochelle, carefully, to delete things. Delete what? She'd say, pretending she didn't understand. The voice notes, I'd say, forcing a laugh. Some of them embarrassing. Rochelle would respond with something like, girl, stop stress yourself. You act like Miles Wicked. But her tone would be amused, like she loved that I was afraid. The first time I truly panicked was when a coworker named Althea stared at me too long at the clinic. You good? Althea asked, slow. Yeah, I said, too fast. Althea made a face like she was holding back words. Okay. Just people chat. My stomach dropped. People chat what? Althea shrugged, eyes sliding away. Nothing. No mind me. That nah, mind me, was a knife. Because it meant there was a story already moving without my consent. That night, I called Rochelle, shaking. Did you tell anyone about me? I asked. She sighed like I was exhausting. Why would Miles do that? because people at work acting weird. Rochelle laughed, sharp. So you really think you important enough for people build a whole story around? Ye go big, nah. My cheeks burned. I'm not saying. She cut me off. Listen, you need for stop freak out. You always in your head. That's why people don't like you. You make everything heavy. I wanted to scream. Instead, I begged again, voice cracking. Just tell me the truth. Please. If you did something, just tell me so I can fix it. There was silence on the line, and I could practically feel her smiling. Fix it how? She asked, soft. You can't fix what people already hear. I started crying, quiet, angry tears. I wiped fast, because I hated myself for giving her the sound of it. Rochelle's voice went gentle, almost loving.
Oh,
look yeah now. Don't cry nah. Miles never say Miles do nothing. Miles just say, you need for be careful who you trust. Do you still have my notes? I whispered. Course, she said, like it was normal. Like it was mine to be ashamed of. Why you ask? Because I want you to delete them. She laughed again. Delete them? Babes, you're funny. What if Miles need proof one day? Proof of what? My voice came out thin. Proof, she repeated, slow. That you're not as innocent as you pretend. And there it was, the real engine. Not friendship, not misunderstanding, control. She wanted to own the version of me the world would believe. I remember gripping my phone so hard my hand cramped, thinking, this is crazy, this is fucked, this is sick. I wanted to curse her out, call her a wicked bitch, tell her she's evil, tell her she's not normal. But shame held my tongue like a gag. Because if I made her angry, if I pushed too hard, she could press play and turn my private desperation into public comedy. And I knew it. I fucking knew it. After that call, I became obedient in ways I didn't even want to admit to myself. If Rochelle asked me to come out, I went. If she wanted me to stay on the phone, I stayed. If she wanted me to apologize for acting up, I did it, swallowing my pride like medicine that tasted like dirt. The reward came in little bursts. She'd send a voice note, me proud AU. You behave good lately. And I'd feel relief like it was love. Then she'd punish me again, just enough to keep me chasing. By the time the exposure happened, the damage wasn't just the recordings. The damage was that I'd been trained to hear my own dignity as something negotiable. The night Rochelle finally pressed play in public, she didn't do it like a villain. She did it like a hostess offering entertainment. It was a Friday, and Kingston felt loud in that end-of-week way. Traffic, music, people hungry for release. Rochelle invited me to a little gathering at someone's apartment off Barbican Road. She called it a chill vibes, like it was harmless. I didn't want to go, but refusing had consequences, and I was tired of consequences. When I walked in, I saw faces I recognized from too many overlapping circles. Girls from high school, a cousin of a coworker, a guy who used to float with me at the clinic then stopped. The room smelled like perfume and rum and fried chicken. Somebody had a speaker playing dance hall low, like a heartbeat. Rochelle greeted me like she loved me. Big smile, arms open. Babes! She said, loud enough for everyone. Come, come meet people. My body stiffened. I smiled anyway. I let her pull me into the center of the room like I was something she wanted to show off. For maybe an hour, nothing happened. I started to think I was paranoid. I started to believe I could survive this if I stayed calm, if I laughed at the right moments, if I didn't look scared. Then Rochelle raised her phone. Wait, she called out, laughing. Wait, Miles have something funny. The room quieted the way rooms do when people sense blood. Eyes turned, smiles sharpened. Rochelle looked directly at me, and her expression was affectionate, almost tender. That's the part that makes me feel sick even now. You ever hear somebody beg? She asked the room, playful. Like, real big? Someone laughed. Someone said, play it! I felt my skin go cold, Rochelle, I said low. Don't. She tilted her head. Don't what? My voice barely worked. Please, don't do this. Oh my God, she said, like I was being dramatic. Relax, a joke. Then she pressed play. My voice filled the room, too loud, too intimate, too alive. The clip was from that night I begged her to tell me what she wanted from me. But Rochelle had cut it. She'd removed her coldness, her baiting, her insults. All anyone heard was me. The desperate parts, the pleading parts, the weak parts. Just tell me what you want from me, my voice said. I'll fix it. I swear I'll fix it. Laughter. Not everyone, but enough. A few girls covered their mouths. A man raised his eyebrows like he'd just learned something juicy. I stood there like my feet were glued to the floor. My mouth opened, but no sound came out. I felt like I was watching myself drown. Rochelle held the phone higher. Proud. Listen to her, she said, delighted. Hear how she sound? Like she in love with misery.
Someone shouted, play next one!
Rochelle did. Another clip, me whispering her name, soft, private. Someone made an exaggerated kissing sound. Someone said, ooh. My stomach clenched so hard I thought I'd vomit. I finally moved toward her. Hand out like I could snatch my dignity back by force. Rochelle stepped away, still smiling. See, she said to the room. She mad now. But when Miles tell her stop act crazy, she never listen. It was so smooth. She turned my reaction into proof of her story. I heard myself speak, and it sounded like a stranger. Why are you doing this? Michelle's smile thinned. Because you need fee learn, she said, still sweet. You can't go through life thinking your feelings more important than people consequences. She stepped closer, voice low enough that only I could hear. For thinking you could ever shame me first. And the truth hit like a slap. This wasn't random cruelty. This was retaliation, planned, curated. Somewhere in her mind, she decided I'd wronged her. Maybe I said something once. Maybe I didn't laugh at her joke. Maybe I didn't answer quick enough. Maybe I existed in a way that annoyed her. And for that, she chose to make me public. The room felt like it was shrinking. People's eyes pinned me to the floor. I could almost hear my mother's voice in my head, what people going say. I could almost see my coworkers whispering, phones out. Faces polite but hungry. I tried to breathe. I tried to look calm. But my chest was a trapped animal. I turned to leave. Rochelle called after me, loud, run away then, go cry. You always cry. A girl laughed. A man muttered, embarrassing. In the hallway, I finally made sound, but it wasn't a sob. It was a gasp, like my body was trying to swallow the shame before it could escape. Outside, the night air hit me like water. I walked fast, almost running, because standing still felt like dying. My phone buzzed in my hand, messages already coming in. A number I didn't recognize. A you dat? Another. Girl.
Ooh.
Then the worst one. Althea from work. We need to talk Monday. My legs went weak. Not because Rochelle played the clips. Not even because people laughed, because it was spreading. And in Kingston, when something becomes entertainment, it doesn't go away. It becomes your name. I stood under a streetlight and stared at my screen, thinking, I'm fucked. I'm so fucking fucked. I wanted to call Rochelle and scream, tell her she's a nasty, wicked, miserable bitch, tell her she can rot. But my fingers wouldn't move. Because the truth was, she didn't need to do anything else. She already did it. She already pressed play. She already turned my private voice into a joke, and now the whole damn city could carry it in their pocket. I went home and sat on my bed in the dark like I used to. Only this time there was no illusion that my room could protect me. My phone kept buzzing. I didn't answer. I couldn't. Every vibration felt like another person replaying me. On Monday at the clinic, the air felt different. Not openly hostile, just adjusted. Polite voices, tight smiles, eyes that didn't quite meet mine. The doctor nodded at me like normal, but his gaze slid away too quickly. Althea didn't even wait until lunch. "You know you can't have that kind of situation tied to the clinic," she said, careful, like she was handling something dirty. "What situation?" I asked, pretending I didn't know, pretending I still had control. Althea sighed. "Don't play innocent. People sending things. Voice notes. Screenshots. It looked bad. Bad. That simple word. Like my whole inner life could be summarized into a stain." I wanted to explain. I wanted to say, I was manipulated. I was trapped. I didn't know. But I could already hear how it would sound. Excuses. Drama. Weakness. So I did what Rochelle trained me to do. I swallowed myself. "I understand," I said, voice steady, like a good girl. And that's the part that haunts me more than the recordings, how easily I stepped into silence to survive. Because now, even when my phone is quiet, I still hear it, my own voice, begging, played back wrong, not just as a memory, but as proof that the version of me people believe is the one Rochelle edited. And I don't know how to live in a city that keeps my humiliation on repeat. Because the worst truth is this. Every time I try to defend myself, I can already hear the laughter starting. Like my voice belongs to them now. And I'm just the woman who taught them how to press play.